is a text amendment to the Winnipeg Zoning Bylaw 200 of 2006, Communication Facility Protocol and Related Bylaw Amendments under file DAZ 200 of 2010. Mr. Chairman, we do have three individuals that have registered for this hearing as well.
Good.
And the applicant is the city.
So since we're the applicant, procedurally they'd introduce it, is that how
yes.
it works?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Proceed, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to turn this over to Val Dean, who was instrumental in bringing this recommendation forward.
Okay. Thanks. The reason that we're here today is to follow up on the Winnipeg Zoning Bylaw Review, which was completed in November 2007, and there was a motion from Council as part of that review to commence a consultation with the industry to discuss regulations for communication towers. So on the basis of that motion, we formed an industry advisory group, which consisted of representatives from the major carriers in the industry, Rogers, MTS, TELUS, the Canadian Wireless Telecommunications Association, and amateur radio, ham radio type operators as well. Industry Canada was also kept informed of our progress throughout those meetings, which occurred over the past couple of years. Moving forward to the current day, notice of the public hearing for today was published in the newspaper, two newspapers, and a project website was established to post public information to give people access to reports and frequently asked questions about this issue, and some important links to the Canadian Wireless Telecommunications Association website and also other municipalities and their protocols and their process for dealing with communication facilities. The purpose of today's public hearing is to deal with zoning bylaw amendments related to this issue and to ask for this committee's endorsement of the protocol, which has been drafted. So we're expecting that the committee would make a recommendation to Council regarding the protocol and deal with the substantive zoning bylaw amendments today as part of this hearing. What we're doing is amending the Winnipeg Zoning Bylaw and will later in Monday's public hearing address the Downtown Zoning Bylaw, so the whole city is affected by these amendments. At your committee, you're only dealing with the Winnipeg Zoning Bylaw. So what we're proposing to do then is add a new definition of a communication facility, remove reference to communication facilities in our use tables and the parking tables, and repeal the use-specific standards. We also have a couple more items for your consideration which are complementary to the zoning bylaw amendments, including amending the fees bylaw to establish a fee for communication facility proposals because they won't be considered as applications, they're just a proposal, and recommend that Council adopt the protocol. We think that this is the right way to go in terms of addressing how communication facilities will be sited and located in the city. Currently, we are using the federal default consultation process, and we've had no complaints with that process, and the protocol mimics that process. The rules for the communication facilities are still tied to the zoning bylaw, so it's an open and transparent process, predictable and more timely. The city's amending the bylaws to clarify and to be transparent about our role in the process and the level of our authority. The process also provides for an environment of dialogue and negotiation rather than adversity and conflict, which you get when you're working with it in terms of the zoning bylaw. We think that this process will also exceed opportunities for public consultation that are currently available through traditional zoning bylaw mechanisms. It allows for an opportunity to resolve issues at an early stage in the process. And it's, as I've said before, it's consistent with other jurisdictions and how they're handling it, and more cities are moving towards protocols rather than the traditional zoning bylaw approach. I can go into more detail about what's in the protocol. The objectives are that it's transparent and provides a predictable process so that everyone knows what the city's expectations are for siting of communication facilities. Provides for the orderly development of the radio communication network, at the same time minimizing adverse visual impacts on the community and protecting the health and welfare of citizens. The protocol does two basic things. It outlines a process for public consultation, and secondly, provides for development guidelines for the siting and location of towers. In terms of the development guidelines, there's four basic principles that the city is putting forward. In general, we want to minimize the visual impact as much as possible. So we've said that we prefer co-location, that carriers, if they're putting up new antennas or new towers, they try to co-locate their facilities as much as possible on existing towers or with other providers. Secondly, we want to have the, what we would say, sort of big, ugly towers, direct those types of towers towards industrial areas and away from residential areas. So the towers that should be located near residential areas would be the ones that would be more in a sort of a stealth design, that they can be camouflaged in existing facilities like on fire halls or schools or libraries or church towers or flagpoles, so that they blend with the surroundings. And that's essentially an overview of the protocol. If you need more detail, I have more detail on certain things, like whether there's exemptions for certain types of facilities that don't require a proposal to be submitted. There's public consultation is only required for certain types of facilities. If you want that detail, I can provide it.
Any questions? Thanks, sir. Any questions of the committee? Why don't you, so why don't you walk us through what it might look like if, for example, a company wanted to put a tower in the unspoiled splendor of downtown, say, North Kildonan or something. How would the public consultation, for the consultation process look with the department and then the public, just so we understand clearly?
Okay. On the inside page of the protocol in your report, there's a flow chart, consultation flow chart. I can walk you through that. Generally, what happens is a proponent, one of the carriers, meets with the City of Winnipeg, and we have a preliminary consultation meeting with them to go over what are our guidelines in the protocol and what our process is. They submit a fee and the appropriate documents, and we start processing that. We circulate it to other departments so that they have input on any requirements they might have for the proponent. Then the proponent sends notice to all of the affected parties. If, for example, they're proposing to locate a facility near a residential area, they have to send notice to residents within three times the height of the tower away from the facility. They receive the public comments and hold a public information session unless the city waives that requirement. And they submit the results of that consultation session to the City of Winnipeg for review. And we discuss with them what opportunities there are to mitigate the impact of that facility on the adjacent residents. And possibly there might be a redesign of the tower. There might be other opportunities that we are aware of for co-location. There may be an opportunity for the city to lease them the land to put up a facility. And so we explore those options with them in a negotiated process. Then at the end of that, the city has to send a letter of concurrence or non-concurrence to Industry Canada, letting them know how we feel about the proposal. And Industry Canada is the final authority for the approval of the tower and the licensing of the tower. Also, throughout that process of consultation, the proponent invites the ward councillor into that discussion, and also the MP for the area.
And how big is your average cell phone tower nowadays? Do we know?
We would ask, possibly ask the MSA representatives here to come.
I don't know. Just wondering what your impression was, too. Eddie, are you back? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll be coming back. So we'll listen to the other folks speak. I know they're here from out of town. The industry perspective, and we'll invite our administration back for final comments. All right, thanks very much. Mm-hmm. that right?
Yep.
I'll type the email.
I'll send it.
All right, we have three folks registered to speak on the matter. All three are registered in support of the protocol. I'll just call them in order. If for some reason there's a different agreement on order between the three delegations, I'll invite you to make changes as you see fit. The first is Keith McIntosh of 130 Albert Street in Ottawa, which I understand is just outside Brandon.
Oh, that he's.
There he is. Welcome.
Would you like me to proceed? Or?
Anytime.
I do have a hand.
Good. Thanks.
A bit of a handout. I can go through it all if you'd like. Or I didn't intend to go through all of the green standing.
Life is better by the minute.
Okay. Or I can just touch on the key points. I'm with the Canadian Wireless Telecom Association. We're the national association representing the wireless industry in Canada. I'm primarily here because in 2007, during the bylaw review, we intervened, and we were there at the beginning when the protocol discussions began. We have more than 180 members, including the carriers, the major manufacturers, and other companies that provide products and services for the wireless industry. There are roughly 23 million cell phone subscribers in Canada. It's about two-thirds of the population. So in Winnipeg, that's roughly 430,000 mobile phones. I understand 175,000 people voted in the 2006 election, so it's about 2.5 times. About 1 in 10 households is cell phone only in Canada, and that's growing every year. So that's about half of the phones now are smartphones, so you got the most famous one, the iPhone, the BlackBerry. So people do more than call. Canadians love their phones. They use data increasingly every day. And so wireless is an enabling technology, right? People use it, individuals, businesses use it to improve their lives because otherwise they wouldn't pay their bills. That drives investment. More than $1 billion a year invested annually. Something about $3 billion total investment last year. So I'll cut to the chase. People expect ubiquity. They expect to get a signal wherever they are, and they expect reliability. They expect that signal to be strong and their data speeds as fast as possible. And that requires antenna sites. So that's why we're here today. There's no way to get around the need for antenna sites to deliver that service to Canadians. We think, in our view, a protocol approach that's being proposed today is a win for municipalities, carriers, and consumers/citizens who are really the same people. Municipalities get to influence the process, influence the sites. Carriers get a predictable and timely process that they can predict the outcome, more or less. And citizens get high quality networks and a voice where that voice is appropriate. So we would support adopting the motion today.
Councillor Shaughnessy.
Only question is personal curiosity. How far away is the industry from being able to operate everything, including the smallest of cell phones, off of satellite?
Well, you can get satellite service today.
I know, but it's. But I can get it off my radio. I can get it on the golf course. Why can't my cell phone operate off that?
It's a really capacity issue. It's a long ways away, and so a satellite and cost. It's capacity and cost, really, to get
the cost.
Astronomical. When they
cost is nothing.
To launch a satellite?
Not to launch a satellite, but it's the capacity. An individual satellite can't handle
Right.
The, 50 million cell phones.
Precisely. The precisely.
Just capacity.
Fair enough. It was expected that the terrestrial networks would never get to the places that they've reached.
Yeah.
Gwynne Plaun or Churchill. So the terrestrial networks grew much, much faster than satellites. Yes.
In general terms, does this make it easier or harder to put up a communications facility?
It makes the process more predictable, and so it makes the lives of service providers easier.
As a follow-up, does this make it harder for new carriers to launch and to give an advantage to incumbent carriers that already have infrastructure?
I don't see an advantage or disadvantage on either for any type of provider. So the process is the same, and I think that I don't think there's any hints to an intervention by this process.
Okay.
Just to go on that. I mean, with the numbers you're talking about, I don't doubt the proliferation of the cell phone. That part I completely accept. So on the ground, what can we expect in terms of cell phone towers in neighborhoods?
Can I leave that to
sure.
to the next intervener?
You can if you want. Yeah, you can. Has there been, since you represent the national industry, what's your impression about how this is going in other cities across Canada? Has it been tough?
It depends on the vast majority of sites are non-controversial.
Right.
The rare sites that are controversial make lots of noise. Protocols have been implemented in many places, and they're successful. They make everybody's life easier. So, in our view, they're very useful.
Yeah, I know the fellows coming behind you are right into that sort of thing, so we can ask those type of technical questions. So, thank you very much, my friend.
Thank you.
Stephen D'Agostino and Reg Park are the two other people who are left to speak. Stephen D'Agostino is listed first. Mr. D'Agostino.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. If I can just wrestle with my technology here for a moment. I brought some slides. There's also a paper copy of the slide presentation. There's 40 slides here. I don't intend to go through all of them. They're really meant to be a resource, depending on what the committee's interested in, where your questions may go. Let me start off by introducing myself. I'm a lawyer in Toronto. I regularly act for Rogers Wireless, for Bell Mobility, and TELUS Mobility. I'm here on behalf of TELUS today, which, as you know, is an active participant in your market. I've been involved in the development of protocols in municipalities since 1996, when they were first used as a tool to work with municipalities to get an understanding from council in advance where the municipalities would like the infrastructure to be deployed, and to get some direction. And that really started this predictability movement that Keith mentioned earlier. The City of Toronto now has a protocol. The City of Calgary has a protocol. The City of Edmonton has a protocol. The City of Vancouver is working on a protocol, which we should see in the next couple of months. In the database of protocols that I have in my firm, 180 municipalities in Canada have protocols. They are the way to go, in my opinion. What they do is they take Industry Canada's generic, vanilla process, and they give it a full emphasis. That's what a protocol is meant to do. And working with your staff, I think that we have a made-in-Winnipeg solution to the deployment of wireless infrastructure here. What your protocol says to the industry is this: if at all possible, stay out of the residential areas. That's what your protocol says. And it makes it tougher for us to go into residential areas, and it makes it easier for us to go into the industrial and the commercial areas from a processing point of view. It also says to us, generically, if you have to go into a residential area, we want you to work hard to ensure that the visual impact of the tower is minimized. And I've got some photographs I can show you later on about some techniques that can be used to minimize. But what the protocol says is, if you're in the other areas, if you're in commercial areas, industrial areas, then we expect you to reduce the amount of infrastructure by co-locating. and there's a visual impact to co-locating, which I'll show you in a moment. But Mr. Chairman, if I may be so bold, just to start off just talking a little bit about technology, and I have this terrible habit of being long-winded, and I appreciate it if you cut me off when you're sick of listening to me. But
we like listening to lawyers here.
You're not on an hourly rate.
I was going to say, that makes Winnipeg unique amongst all the municipalities that work.
A certain soft spot for lawyers.
Yeah, but what's important to understand with respect to cellular technology is in fact, it's dependent upon, and I thought I had a slide up there, it's absolutely dependent upon cells. So what happens is each tower with antenna radiates around a cell, and if you're in that cell, you have coverage, you get a signal. What's important to understand is each antenna, in round numbers, only handles about 200 phone calls. And so what the industry has to do when they need to get more capacity is they need to start cutting these cells up into pieces so that they can create more little boxes of 200 phone calls in round units. One of the technological concerns that the carriers have is that they can't overlap their signals, and the cell sites are very expensive. And so although they want to cut the cells up whenever they can to create capacity, because of the limitation on the frequency that they're allowed to transmit on, they're actually constrained in the number of cell sites they can have. So there's always this tension between providing cell sites and minimizing the cost of infrastructure and the risk of overlapping in frequencies. Here's the problem. This is real data from a Rogers site that I worked in recently. It's a rural site. It's not an urban site, but it gives you the idea. The blue is really good coverage. The lighter green is less good coverage. The yellow is maybe you'll get it, maybe you won't. The green is maybe you'll get it, maybe you won't. The yellow is you're really in trouble. And red, your phone will tell you there's no signal at all. And so what the carrier does when they see this kind of data is they say, well, we need a tower to here somewhere. And they will generate a prediction of what the tower will do. And you'll see in this case, Rogers, with this bigger tower, was able to minimize the amount of yellow and red and provide a fairly good continuous service throughout. People use these things in their cars. People use them while they're walking. They move from cell to cell. So you need that seamless integrated connection from one site to the next. Now, here's the problem we have, and you're going to see it in Winnipeg. And this is really why you're going to see growth in Winnipeg. As the cell gets full, the technology is really smart. And what it does is it says, who is the farthest away from the tower? And it does that by measuring signal strength. And if the cell site will take 200 calls, call number 201 gets cut off. And the computer says, if you're the farthest away, you're the one that gets cut off. And so the system creates its own holes. So the success of the system creates its own problems, its own voids. And so what all the carriers have to do is start to develop sites in these voids to fill in the holes that are created by their own success. And that's why in Winnipeg and other municipalities where cell phones are used, you're going to have the constant deployment of new antennas because success breeds technological problems. We have the same problem with street situations. You know, if you have a downtown, if you have a road closed for a downtown festival, for example, people who would ordinarily get cell coverage will not get the cell coverage. Again, the cell phone that's farthest away gets cut off from the antenna. If that happens regularly, the cell industry responds by putting in another antenna and backfilling the void. So we're in a situation where we're constantly going to be deploying new sites. Here's the good news, is as these new sites are deployed, the design height of the antennas will come down. When I first started doing this work in the late 80s, it was usual to have a tower 350 feet tall. That was the usual size. And now, working in some very dense urban areas, I'm working on towers that are 25 feet tall. And that's because they're covering very small, dense areas, providing tremendous capacity in a very small area. Now, Reg Parkin with MTS tells me that here in Winnipeg, he's often designing at about the 60-foot level. You know, the other carriers are a little bit taller than that because he has a lion's share of the market. So we're a little taller, but everybody's going to come down over time. So that's the good news. More sites, but lower sites over time. So I'd like to just shoot ahead, if I can, and just show you the other problem that we have. And this really goes to the satellite issue. Shadowing is a real problem. If you think of radio waves, they're just part of the light spectrum. And if you show, if you think of a cell site as a street light, what you do is you look at the illuminated area, and it tells you where the coverage is. So we get blocked by buildings, we get blocked by hills, we get blocked in valleys where the if the slope is really steep, we get blocked. I've worked on some of the terrestrial radio stations that were deployed when the new satellite music stations came online. Although everybody thinks they're satellite radio, because of the shadowing problem that the satellites have, they too have antennas all over. So, so satellite, even if there was capacity, isn't the answer because of the shadowing concern. So that's another reason why you end up getting more sites just to fill in the shadows. In Winnipeg and other urban areas, the real answer, if at all possible, is going to be the use of rooftops and existing buildings. And you do that for two reasons. One is, it's economics. The economics of putting in a roof compared to building your own tower is quite simple. It's much less expensive. But the built form of the building is already there. You already have the visual impact of the building and the other impacts associated with the building. So adding the modest impact of an antenna on the building from a land use point of view really is a nothing. So from a land use point of view, in my submission, it's the way to go. And your protocol really tries to drive us to the rooftop solution wherever possible. I'm going to show you some techniques towards the end of the slide deck on how to hide these or make them less visually obtrusive. But I just want to point out that simply by putting them against the parapet wall or the service wall of the elevator enclosure, the service enclosure, makes the antennas disappear into the building with almost no other work. If you can't do that because of a design height issue, then these slimline poles, again, if you look for them, you'll see them. But if you're walking along the street, nobody notices them. Nobody sees them. Remembering shadowing for a moment, let me point something out to you. The reason why on this particular site they're up high is they were trying to get coverage toward the bottom of the building. If you put it on the elevator building, the edge of the building would shadow. And so, as a matter of design, you don't always have the ability to put them against the building. Let me just shoot forward. Co-location. Valdeen has said to you, and I've submitted to you, that what this protocol says is when you're outside of the residential area, it's co-located. Reduce the number of structures. But here's what you get. This is a single-loaded tower. You'll see that there's one antenna array on the top. On a co-located structure, everybody gets their own pinwheel. And the reason they get their own pinwheel is because they need a vertical separation distance for their antennas. And so you end up with all this hardware in the sky. So you'll have fewer towers, but it's much more visually obtrusive. The other problem that you have with co-location is just a couple more examples. I apologize. These ones are a bit more dramatic than they really ought to be. But again, you get the idea of the multiplicity of the pinwheels going up. Here's the problem we have with co-location. If we can't use the slimmer monopoles when we co-locate, because each antenna is driven by a coax cable about that big. There's actually two of them per antenna. They have to fit inside the monopole. So for one carrier, you can see that it's a fairly slim radius on the pole. If you start adding carriers, you've got to make room for all those cables for each of the carriers inside the monopole. So if you remember from high school math, pi, the relationship of pi to the diameter means that we're going to end up with very big monopoles where there's a requirement for co-location, large enough that some in your planning department might suggest that they have their own GFA. So let me just go ahead to some of the stealth solutions. This is the Flatiron Building in Toronto. It's a historic building. That is a cellular antenna right there. All that's happened is it's been painted to match the brick, right? No special cowling, no special fiberglass, all of which would degrade the signal and force another site to be created nearby. You can't see it. It's on the historic building. This is what's called a tripole. So it's a regular way to hide antennas. You just put fiberglass over the top, and you put something on top. This could say, welcome to Bob's Golf Course. In this particular case, it's a church. I've done sites where they've been regional police detachments. It's a sign for all intents and purposes.
This is a shorter monopole where in order to get the design height, we cut the pole short and just push the poles up, again, to try to make it less visually obtrusive. This is downtown Toronto, the Bay again, a historic site. Color-matched antennas. Can't see them. Right, same idea. You see the color match, and they disappear into the building. So there's lots that can be done without a lot of muss and fuss. Again, sorry, you're going to get bored of this. Color matching, they blend right into the urban landscape. This is a very expensive solution. It works every now and then where a landlord requires it. This is a fancier version of the tri-pole where they put a clock tower on the top, but essentially that's, again, is a fiberglass casing around the antenna structures. Now, the downside to using these tri-pole solutions is you're limited in the number of antennas you can put behind them. It's limited in your ability to down-tilt the antenna, so you can't get the same engineered solution using them, but, you know, it makes the feature go away. Here's another example. This is at Deerhurst Resort, where the G8 will be in a couple of months. This is a Rogers and a Bell site. Again, it's a tri-pole fiberglass enclosure on the top to mimic an old-fashioned water tower. A fairly inexpensive solution. This is a mock-up of a site that ultimately wasn't built. But Sobeys was looking at allowing a site on their property with signage, and this municipality didn't like the signage in this particular instance. But again, the signage on the top of the tower was meant to hide the antennas. This is the flagpole solution. This is a style of tower that is not really very good for sharing. So you'd use this in a residential situation. Essentially what the carrier does is they'll put their antennas behind the fiberglass at the very top. And you can only really get three antennas in there packed really closely together. So there's no room for anybody else, and there's no width for anybody else. But to all the world, it's just a flagpole. It's a little thicker than your average flagpole, but it's just a flagpole. And so this kind of a design allows us to come into the residential areas without creating much controversy at all.
Apologies. We're going to take a two-minute break. And we're not cutting you off.
Okay.
We're sorry to do this right in the middle of your presentation.
That's right.
We'll be right back with you. Okay. Sit down, relax for a moment. We have to take a break if one of the quorum has to leave the room. This is interesting.
Yes.
So once about downtown, I always have a hole with my satellite radio. Apparently the towers downtown are on the Radisson Hotel for the XM satellite.
Oh,
okay. The spot where there's, I'll get it, you know, like in the library parkade down to the second level, but for some reason, right on Portage Avenue there, it's in that.
Yeah.
In a shadow.
Yeah.
She was downstairs working on the computer, and I was downstairs working too.
Oh, wow.
So we were both at work, but we weren't.
Any questions?
If you told the property, you just come in.
Yeah, I know it's something. Yeah, as well. Did a couple of deals.
More toy supporters than any toy supporters.
That was impressive. And rated highest amongst the $100,000 plus.
No, really?
It's double digit.
What?
7% of $100,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, really interesting. I saw the Tories and rich people.
Weird. I mean,
I know. I would have thought, right?
Counterintuitive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thanks for sending that.
Yeah. My Chris Adams list for all of this.
Chris Adams. You wrote a book, eh?
Yeah, but Matt Double Politics.
Sometimes he writes a column, right?
Yeah, I'll write columns.
And he's from Transformer.
Okay, maybe we'll get right back at her. Sorry about that. Please continue where you left off.
Hurry, some of these medications are not good.
Well, I'm on a diuretic, so I'm with you, sir.
Bingo.
As Valdine predicted when she was talking about the protocol, there's going to be times when we have to come into the residential areas. And that's, because of this technological problem, we've got to be close to the users. Frankly, the big users, the big market of the future is the residential home. I mean, that's where the wireless internet is. That's the kids with the phones. Your police department is likely using cell phones as their secondary communication system, if not the first, so they've got to work in basements. So ultimately, we're going to have to come to the residential area. And when we do, what your protocol says is, give us a slimmer, less obtrusive-looking tower, something that's not co-located, because you saw the hardware issue that we have with co-located. So what the protocol says is don't co-locate. And so this is an example of a very simple tower in the edge of a residential area that's not co-located, and all the carrier has done is push the antennas close together, which frankly ruins the radio propagation. But because you're trying to get to something close by, the engineers generally can live with it, and it just blends right into the streetscape. Other examples, this is a parking lot in Mississauga. You see the antennas at the top of the lights. Right, again, if you just push the antennas up close to the antenna, again, you ruin the radio propagation, but you get something that fits more into the urban form. That site could just as easily have been a flagpole. Right, so you paint it the right color. And with the Niagara Escarpment Commission, which some of you may be familiar with, it's a World Biosphere Reserve recognized by the United Nations, they have a landscape architect who gives us paint chips and says, this is the paint chip for your tower, for this site. It gets painted, it blends into the landscape. People don't really notice it. So, a couple more images of the same thing. So, Mr. Chairman, really what I'm here to say is this, is that we're a captive of our federal regulator, we're a captive of the technology, and we're a captive of our clients, who are the public who pay for the use of the technology. We don't want to be controversial, but we have to provide sites in order to sell the service. So we're anxious to be part of a solution that gets our sites built in the right locations without controversy. And we think that your protocol does that by encouraging us away from the residential areas. But where we have to be in residential, it tells us how to do it in a way that gives the public their say, and ensures that we're doing designs that are of the least visual impact. So subject to any questions they have, that's way more than I should have said.
That's good. Interesting. Brian?
This is a more Manitoba-specific question. What is our future in the city of Winnipeg and the province of Manitoba in regards to the number of networks that are going to be operating? I'm thinking more specifically. I understand Rogers is now in partnership with MTS. They're arguably today the two biggest providers that are using the same technology. in terms of the number of sites, right now I guess you guys have more larger sites at greater distance, you know, probably close to each other, co-located in many cases. Will you quickly need to put up a lot of additional micro towers in neighborhoods because of the one technology, the one band of sorts?
Well, there's three tensions. I can't answer the question by saying here's how many sites you're going to see, but I can tell you what the tensions are. The wireless data is going to be a big tension. Right now, many residences are taking their internet communications using a cable solution. What we're going to find in the next couple of years is that the wireless data solutions are faster and more robust, and people will move in that direction. That's going to pull the sites into the residential areas. The federal government's also has licensed more spectrum, so there's new entrants moving forward. We're going to see Wind Mobile in this market in about 2 years' time. They're going to need sites. The federal government's protocol says generically, co-locate everything. But your protocol will override that, and it'll say in the residential areas, you know, build your own less obtrusive towers in commercial areas, then yeah, find somebody else's site to co-locate on, so it should be less of an impact. So I think over time what you'll see is you'll see more sites if you're looking for them, but if you're not, you'll notice them less because the design heights will come down, and because everybody's getting better at making these blend into the urban landscape, they in fact will generally blend in.
Thank you.
I don't see any issue sort of in the industrial commercial areas. The pictures of the antennae on high rises of commercial buildings, I can't see that being an issue at all, candidly. Where I'm still not 100% clear, maybe just give the committee an idea. Let's take Fort Richmond, a suburban area, entirely residential virtually. What would the tower dispersion look like in a place like that?
Well, what the carriers do, every carrier has a land acquisition team, and they go out, and they're skilled at finding sites that have the least amount of controversy that meet the engineering parameters. So they're all given a map with a big circle on it, and depending on how the network's performing, the circle's bigger or smaller, but that's what they're given. And so they go out, and they know that if they can get a site on a commercial piece of property adjacent to the residential area, it's going to be a lot less controversial than, say, they've got a lease in somebody's backyard. Right, a backyard would be the most controversial. A gas station would be the least. So they'll look for the sites that are least controversial. Because ultimately, these sites are no good if they're not built. In a residential area, they're going to go through a public process where every member of the public will have a right to speak, have a right to do written submissions if they so choose. And so our job as the carriers, and I train my clients in consultation on other things, our job is to pick the site in the first instance that causes people not to pause and say, I don't like that. And so I'll give you an example of a great residential site. Churches, right? Churches have parking lots. Churches are located generally, the older churches, in residential areas. The parking lots are such that you can locate a tower generally away from the adjoining residences, so there's no shadow and people aren't worried about something falling over and hitting their property, although that never happens, but people worry about that. So that's what they do. They also look for municipally owned sites, you know, in municipalities where you have pump stations. Those pump stations generally are a decent size parcel in an existing subdivision and are terrific cell sites. There's already a building there, you can load on it. So what we do is we look for the non-residential land in the residential area. I should have told you probably in my introduction, I act for a number of municipalities and regional governments, and I can tell you my clients' municipalities regularly lease park space. Parks are in residential areas. These towers have no impact on the park. They don't create traffic. They don't create odor. They don't create any of those land use things you worry about. The municipality gets some revenue. You get the tower in the residential area. So a park is a great solution. I'm working right now with one of my clients on a regional park where the tower is going up in the parking lot and it's providing the lighting. The tower is being used as a light standard for the parking lot and as well providing cell coverage for the area. So when we think about these sites going into residential areas, don't think about them going onto the residential street per se. What they're going to do is they're going to bite around the edges for the next little while, and we're then getting interior to the residential area by using a park, by using a church, by using a non-residential use. That's what they'll do. We're constrained because we don't have the right of expropriation. We have to go where we've got a landlord. So you know, that's the exercise that the land acquisition specialist goes through, is finding a landlord who would be non-controversial.
And the thank you. And so that's the way it works. A company owns the cell phone tower.
Yes. So as it stands right now, there are no speculative companies building cell towers in Canada. There are some states. There's a couple of companies that just build towers for spec and hope that somebody will come along and rent the space. But the tradition in Canada is that TELUS, for example, will come in. Let's use a commercial example. They'll come in and they'll get a lease for a site where they need it. They would then do notice to the other carriers in the area and say, we're building here. Do you want to come on? Because it's much cheaper for us to design the tower with the other carrier in mind at the time that we're building it. So there's a circulation process. And everybody has their own staff who do nothing but the co-location exercises, right? Because it's faster, it's cheaper, it's a much better way for us to go, other than the visual impact issue, which we referred to earlier.
And in one of those towers, what is the broadcast width of one of those towers?
It depends on the height. It's like thinking like a street light. Taller it is, the wider the area. So in a rural area, 300-footer, 18 kilometers. In downtown Toronto, some of the shorter towers, 50 meters.
Is that right?
Right? And it's a question of capacity. On the Gardiner Expressway in Toronto, you're switching cells when you're doing limit. You're switching cells about every 7 seconds as you drive along there because there's so much cell use on the highway. So again, it's a function of the height of the tower.
And if I understand it correctly, as the amount of cell phones increases, the more towers we're going to need, generally speaking.
Right? That's right. And the good news is, of course, that they get shorter.
Winnipeg has our building code requires a ridiculous number of streetlights in residential neighborhoods. How close are we to the point of, you'll get your high-speed internet off the telephone poles? Are they not doing that in Toronto to some degree?
We're really close. I can tell you one of the carriers is doing an experiment in British Columbia right now involving streetlights. It's involving the old technology, and so the question is whether or not it'll translate to the new technology that everybody's moving to. But that's just engineering. I mean, the municipality said, let's try the experiment, and it seems to be working. I know that there's Wi-Fi companies now that are using public infrastructure for the Wi-Fi signal. I got to say, the cell towers can be really rigid, and so streetlights aren't always rigid enough. You have to rebuild the streetlight. But people don't really understand a streetlight versus a tower when they're walking by. They're all the same color, or they're all doing the same thing.
The streetlight can't waver, but you can be going 100 kilometers an hour in your car from tower to tower to tower to tower without an interrupt, without knowing it.
That's right.
But it can't waver.
Yeah, it's because when the antennas waver, they change their tilt. And so what happens is you lose the propagation characteristics on the edge.
Great stuff.
One thing that you
said, I was a lawyer, right?
I always assumed that on a cell phone, the signal is just bouncing from tower to tower. There's actual wires inside that carry the signal?
Yeah, there are. Because there's radio equipment at the bottom that actually either amplify the signal or repropagate it or connect it to a fiber network to get into the public telephone system. Because ultimately, all these calls have to dump into the public telephone system at some point. So what everybody's using right now, and Reg can talk about what MTS is doing there, they started off with big shelters that looked like the shipping containers. Because technology is wonderful, the radios are getting smaller, and people now are able to use cabinets, which just look like small refrigerators, or big refrigerators, depending on the carrier. So that's what's going on at the bottom of the cell. That's the power to make those antennas work.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your presentation this morning.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Interesting.
Thank you for having me.
Mr. Parkin.
Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
Wasn't very nice what you did. Having a presenter follow a lawyer is following Bill Clinton. Hopefully, I'm just going to be able to. I work for MTS, by the way. I probably project manage most of the towers in
southern Manitoba in the last 10, 12 years and throughout the province. Hopefully I can just augment some of the information without taking up too much of the time. But with the technology perspective, it's and being able to get a signal in, any of us with kids or know young people have, I've got two daughters of my own who use a cell phone for texting. They don't use it for calling. It's like the commercial. They don't, you know, their grandmother and mother calls them on the phone, that's it. The rest of the time it's texting. And more now it's downloading off the internet. And with the new technology coming up, that's where it's all going. High-speed data, as fast as you can get it, everywhere you can get it. In order to do that, again, it's all the pipe. It's the capacity of each cell tower. The more usage, the shorter, the smaller the area becomes. So the infill is paramount. From a construction perspective, the smaller the facility to put up, the easier it is for me. We used to go into an area in Winnipeg, and engineers would give me an area of 20 by 20 city blocks to find a location. Now we're getting within a block, and if it's outside that block, we can't do it. It's a waste of money. The signals that are being sent now are so minute that there can be no variation in where that antenna is placed. For instance, South St. Anne's Road is a 120-foot monopole close to the Seine River. The signal on the ground to the closest condo, which is a few hundred feet away, is 1/1,000,000th of a watt. So your microwave, about 1,200 watts. These lights, 40, 50, 60 watts each. 1/1,000,000th of a watt. So there can be obstructions like we see out the window. The signals will not come through. Larger complexes, we can go inside, we can put small antennas inside buildings, leaky coax, and get the signal out. But the demand is there, and in order to get to these areas, we require the towers. What we don't require anymore is a height. Matter of fact, we need less and less. And we're, as Stephen said, we're down to, in most areas in Winnipeg, 60 feet. The smaller the tower as well, the less impact on it. There's all kinds of things that we can do when, you know, working with city planners, with residents, with business owners, as far as ideas go. I mean, the sky is open. We don't want to have a negative impact. I mean, we've been around this province for 100 plus years, and I don't think, you know, anyone wants our reputation tarnished, so we'd like to do the right thing, and we think we have tried. And as technology changes, we get a little better at it as well. Stephen also alluded, the equipment that, or the antenna that you see is only a part of it. What we're down to now in many cases is a cabinet, a pedestal cabinet, and that's getting smaller as well. So the footprint that we're taking up is much less. It was just a few points. I'm not sure if there's any questions.
Yeah. I have a pretty ugly tower. My ward was one of the first.
Yeah.
It's about 10 feet in diameter, and it's clad.
I know the one.
Those there, Jefferson and McPhillips. One of the ugliest. Are these things going to disappear? Are they going to be replaced at any point?
I personally, if we're not using a tower, if we don't no longer require that tower to be there for either microwave or cell, we take it down generally. In NTS. It's a liability, it's a cost to have it there. In the city, to replace something that's existing, I'm not sure. I know the tower you talk about, that's not one of ours.
Oh, it isn't?
No.
Because it's more than 10 years old. It's
yeah, for sure. And basically in downtown Winnipeg, I mean, I don't expect you're going to see too many towers. It's going to be rooftops or sides of buildings much lower down. I'm not sure. I mean, we like to get rid of them if they're not in use, but if they're still in use,
they're
going to replace.
Be in use. Why would people out of
use?
Okay. Thank you. I'm sort of going down the same track. I mean, in terms of, you know, if we're going to all these small towers now, how soon will we see old ones coming down? If MTS is piggybacking on the Rogers network, or, you know, you're having redundant sites with the HSDPA technology and all that. What's the sort of schedule for elimination of old towers? Or
we haven't really in the city. There's no, as far as I know, no schedule for at least the next 5 or 6 years for elimination of towers. What we have out there is being used, even with the augmentation between Rogers and MTS. We still have our old CDMA network that we're continuing. and will be in use for a number of years yet. But much of the land in the city of Winnipeg, we prefer to own land. That in the city, that's not always possible. Landlords like to lease it, not sell it to you. And doing such, if we're paying an annual fee, if we don't need it, we'd like to get rid of it. Yeah, that's a cost that's unnecessary.
I'd asked earlier about sort of how many cell towers would be needed. I came to the elementary conclusion that as people, if you doubled the amount of cell phones, you'd double the amount of cell towers. But one thing, when you talked about the type of technology, the streaming, the live TV, internet on cell phones, etc., is my assumption not quite correct? Because as this new technology emerges, each individual phone is going to require more capacity. So it's going to be more than just a one-to-one. If everybody suddenly starts getting the new technology, which is live television on your streaming from the internet on your cell phone, then suddenly that piece of equipment would need width of 20 cell phones that only took hold. Is that about right?
No, you're right. I mean, the technology is between the transmission of the signal and the reception of it. Those technologies have increased. Keith and I were just talking a moment ago that only 10 years ago, analog was king. Analog was just, prevalent out there. And now it's not. And the handsets are getting so small that they're almost, at least for me, awkward to talk on at some point.
One more question. MTS puts, at its own cost, I believe, hardwire into every new home built. My daughter doesn't have a landline, doesn't think about it, nor do her friends for the most part. So are you going to, will there be a day when there's a little tower next to the chimney on every house and that's it?
I don't know. I watched how William Shatner changed the world from Star Trek in the 60s to where it is.
And that's old-fashioned now.
It is. I don't know how to answer that. I mean, technology, it's an odd industry. Telecommunications, and I've worked for MTS for 30-plus years. Technology drives everything, not necessarily the customer in a lot of cases. And I don't know where it's going to take us. I would never have guessed 5 years ago we'd be looking at 60-foot poles.
Not the most vulnerable part.
No. Could I be? Should I be?
I don't know the word apartment in the neighborhood.
But no, I'm not.
So I've been trying to get an idea of how far apart are cell phones in your average suburban community? Is that too hard a question to ask?
Well, yeah, it's a bit of an ambiguous answer because it depends on the population density and the usage.
But every suburban neighborhood is about the same density, roughly. Not like White Ridge or Linden Woods or South San Patel. They're all kind of the same. Do you have any sense of how far apart they are currently and where it might be going? Hard to say.
I can't. I can tell you from my residence, I can't even see a cell tower,
right,
except one of our competitors. But I know they're surrounding, on rooftops.
They all work. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, there's currently roughly between 150 and 180 cellular and PSS radio towers in the city of Winnipeg.
What was that number, Barry? Sorry.
150 to 180 towers in Winnipeg right now.
Okay.
And the average
is 5. Not as many as I would have thought, honestly. Any other questions, Mr. Parkin? Nope. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're easy on Parkin so much.
Yeah, that's probably true. I was thinking that. That's probably actually true. Okay. Do they have a chance to speak in rebuttal type of thing?
Is that
the
way? Yeah.
Do you want to shoot down the arguments or just put forward?
We're just grateful for having the opportunity to work with the industry over the last couple of years to reach a compromise that I think that it's a win-win for everyone.
Okay. Well, here's what... one of the things that has occurred to me, I guess, on this is the public consultation piece. I think that's the last thing any councillor wants, I suppose, is to have a cell phone tower snuck in without sort of knowledge. But we're covered. Obviously, there's always some debate as to who holds the final hammer on this. I guess it is the federal government, ultimately. But with
we have some influence on that, right?
That's right.
So just to be clear, when a cell phone tower is proposed, the company has to come to our department. The department will come to the ward counselor.
Correct.
So we'll always have that coverage. And we can make our determination from there, I suppose. The one thing that kind of gets me about the protocol, and I don't see what else could be done necessarily, but it's the old three times the tower height width of public consultation. I mean, half the time that's not going to be anybody, I would suggest, right? Or very few people, or a couple businesses. I mean, if you look at a lot of the street placements, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so. But that would be the reality, I think, members of the committee, is when a tower is proposed, it'll go to our department. Department will notify the counselor, and then people can make their own determinations from there.
I think it's also important to realize that the municipality will be providing a letter of concurrence or non-concurrence to the federal government.
On every tower.
On every application.
Which is, I guess, the authority we ultimately would have in any event, right?
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions of the committee?
Have any towers been held in abeyance because of this coming forward?
While the zoning bylaw was being reviewed and we got challenged with the task of looking at this issue, we used the default provision, which is the federal government's protocol on processing. We did that for a couple of years, and in fact, we found it to be a great system. We didn't hear any complaints. Community individuals were aware of applications, so that was helping us to move into the protocol that's appropriate for the city of Winnipeg.
Okay. Councillor Berwati moves that the report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Councillor Berwati moves that receipt of public representations be concluded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Councillor Berwati, are you going to move that the recommendations of the Winnipeg Public Service be concurred in?
I will.
Okay. He will move that, and he will move that they are forwarded onto the Executive Policy Committee and Council. Any comments before we vote? None. All those in favor?
Aye.
Supporting reasons as concurrence with the administrative report?
That's correct.
Okay.
And Councillor Berwati moves the public hearing with respect to this application be concluded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you very much for your presentations this morning. Good luck with the new protocol. We look forward to your ongoing cooperation, obviously. Very important for our citizens.
Yeah.
I have some news. On the 3009 McPhillips Street. The craziest thing happened. The appellant was in the wrong room waiting for his turn at bat. Sat through the Protection Community Services meeting.
Infrastructure
meeting, only to learn that he was in the wrong room. He's here now.
And Harry Bill as well should have to hear the appeal then.
Yeah, so in the circumstances, Council
Chairman, if it's within protocol, I would move that the
public hearing be reopened.
The decision of the standing committee be set aside and the public hearing be reopened for the reasons as stated by the chair earlier.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Mr. Capulis was not in the room for the benefit of the procedure, Mr. Clerk.
Yep.
Mr. Capulis, the clerk is going to explain the procedure. Please have a seat.